Prologue. Medusa syndrome. There were numerous hypotheses, but once the Dentist Association named it Medusa syndrome, the mythological figure's name infiltrated public discourse. Medusa doesn't possess two tongues, but rather, she has a forked tongue like a snake. The invisible tongue lacks physical feature. It is literally invisible. Chapter 1. Mirror Check. People diligently practice pronouncing numbers and their names correctly, persistently moving their tongues to tame them. Some experts consider this unruly new disease to be a form of differentiation pain, specifically a variation of phantom pain. Typically, phantom pain arises from a loss of a certain part of body. However, in this case of Medusa syndrome, the prison of diverging, yet to be visible tongue, causes a person to experience a painful sensation. Therefore, placing this unruly system known as Medusa syndrome on par with phantom pain proved challenging. Interestingly, similar treatment method had been developed by a neuroscientist for patients combating phantom pain. His name, Vilayender Ramachandran, an American Indian neuroscientist, pioneered mirror therapy, mirror visual feedback as a remedy. The concept is straightforward. The mirror box, a simple apparatus, reflected the amputee's intact arm, creating an illusion of an extended missing limb. A similar approach was encouraged during an early stage of Medusa syndrome for self-diagnosis. This method was referred to as a mirror checking. Mirror checking involved carrying a pocket mirror. Although it wasn't officially accredited, the design of self-diagnosis mirror differed from a regular mirror, featuring a removable stick to aid in a tilting for indirect vision. The mirror frame was crafted from beeswax candle. It had approximately 3 to 5 candle wicks encircling the rounded frame. This candle proved the illumination for the darker corner of the mouse. People carried this pocket mirror not only for self-diagnosis, but also as a means to soothe their nerve system. It functioned more as a sacred object akin to a totem. Chapter 2. Foraging Names. Around the same time, Changxi Gaemyeong, Soshi Kaimei, was enforced by a government. Although it was presented as a voluntary choice for citizens, the fear of consequences for non-compliance loomed large. As a result, 80.3% of citizens created a new surname and changed their given name. Simultaneously, a peculiar trend emerged. People began naming their tongues after medicinal herb. Common choices included herb found in sidewalk cracks, such as hydrocotyledipterpeodislam, pimagikpu. Naming their tongues after medicinal herb was believed to confer protection upon the speakers. Consequently, countless tongues acquire earthy, muddy, and sometimes bitter names. People often invoke the saying, "Good medicine is bitter to the mouth." Treating naming as a form of traditional Oriental medicine, they continue by asserting it helps strengthen the tongue muscles. Initially, this naming practice spread among those who had undergone Soshi Kaimei, but later it extended to people grappling with Medusa syndrome. Eventually, this form, a group that embarked on foraging expedition for medicinal herb together, This group organized a nocturnal foraging walks during the full moon, collecting and rubbing herb on their tongues. These silent and bitter, sweet walks gradually transformed the group into the writing collective known as the Night Tongue. Chapter 5. DSM, Culture Bound Syndrome. The false version of Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorder, published in 1994, included a list of most common culture-bound syndromes. In the past, the term exotic was used to emphasize the non-Western nature of culture-related conditions. It is important to note that the classification system itself had an impact on long-standing colonialism, disregarding the existing indigenous healthcare systems. Medusa syndrome was identified in a specific group of individuals. Initially, there was insufficient data to prove an overview of statistics. However, as time went on, authorities were able to gather more information. They found that young Korean women were reporting significant symptoms of Medusa syndrome, indicating a higher occurrence within this group. The symptom manifested both physically and emotionally. Physical symptoms included chest pain, throat pains, a subjective feeling of lump or foreign body in the throat, respiratory discomfort, and difficulty breathing, often accompanied by a sensation of suffocation. In particular, the sensation of foreign body was frequently reported in specific areas, such as pains around the tongues, behind the tongues, and on the darker side of the tongues. Emotional symptoms encompassed a sense of impending insanity and overwhelming urge to speak. Behavior symptoms included shouting, cursing, and incoherent speech. Interestingly, these behavior symptoms, or more specifically linguistic symptoms, were significantly different from other mental disorder. Those afflicted with Medusa syndrome exhibited broken language, often incomprehensible and at times resembling growling, humming, and murmuring. At other times, their speech would be remarkably clear, with proper pronunciation and accent. However, the tension in their tongues would eventually lead to stuttering words. Additionally, they would mix languages without following consistent rules or order. The primary group affected by Medusa syndrome consisted of young Korean women who had crossed the Sea of East and migrated from one land to another. Another intriguing observation was that they lived in close proximity to one another. This raised the question, is Medusa syndrome contagious? Chapter 6, Pyeongkut. After refusing to take a bath, she decided to take a nap, something she rarely did. Her mind was clouded, her jaws ached from being forced to open an extended period. She let out a sigh and murmured, "What a heavy fatigue," before drifting off to sleep. In her slumber, she saw her mother. Perhaps she had become her. Sweat-drenched, her body as a night engrossed, her tongue in conversation. "Oh, mouse, father, mother, Omani, who, her mother, had often recounted the ritual she underwent during her childhood to combat an unexplained illness. This ritual, known as Pyeongkut, involved a shamanic practice aiming at healing. The family sought the assistance of local shaman who would determine whether the illness stemmed from ancestral grievance or the influence of restless spirit. The shaman's diagnosis was based on family's narrative, unraveling the dread of suppressed voices within the family, particularly those of women who bore the silent burden of caregiving amidst the familiar conflict. Through singing, crying, and dancing, the shaman would guide a family member, allowing them to transcend their unspoken suffering. In her dream, she absorbed the voice of her mother. No, it was perhaps herself. Her voice was accented and punctuated by rhythmic sounds of the bell from the shaman and desperate prayers of family. Her night tones said, "We listen to the echoes of woman who came before us. We listen to the echoes of woman who came before us."